Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Speaking Literally, where the books speak for themselves. I'm Liz.
And I'm Holly, and we're so excited to be back. So we're going to jump right into our bookish buzz. So some of the big news that's been going on in the book world over the last month since we were last with you. I guess it hasn't even really been a month. It's only been about 3 weeks. So, yeah. So we'll get started. On September 1st, it was announced that the winner of the fourth Wright Prize was revealed. So Zimbabwe-born Gift Nyoni won the 2021 fourth Wright Prize for his short story, which is called The Ritual Seat of the King. And he explores in his short story how life of a young boy changes with the ending of the Rhodesian Civil War. So that's awesome. That's pretty cool. And this award, in case you've never heard of it, I know I hadn't heard of it, and when Liz and I were talking about it, she had never heard of it. It's an award that is given to writers in the United Kingdom for best new black or minority ethnic writers. So what a cool award, and kudos to Gift Nyoni for winning the 2021 award.
Great news. Yeah, I just looked it up. It's actually also linked to Fourth Estate Publishers. That I think that might be why it's called Fourth Wright. I've heard of them. They did the Troubles books that I spoke about a few episodes ago. The Troubles with Us, which is really good.
Yep.
Okay, so the next piece of news comes to us through Netflix. And some of you may or may not have seen Bridgerton Season 1, which is a period drama. And it's also a book series as well. And they confirmed that season 2 is coming. And this is really exciting. I really did enjoy this this series. So looking forward to seeing what happens next. I've only read the first book, but I haven't read the rest. So I might have to have a little delve into book 2 and see what happens.
I probably just need to delve into book 1 and get on the Bridgerton train, because I know this will make a lot of people happy. And for some reason, I'm still trying to run to catch the caboose of this train.
It's nice. It kind of mixes your classic period drama with a little bit of more modern day, especially when they do in the season 1. They actually have some of the orchestras and the balls playing modern songs, which is quite interesting. So yeah, it's got like nice little sort of mix between the two, so it's kind of great for both audiences, really.
That's kind of cool.
So from a high note to sadly a low note, so we did hear that on August 18th a famous children's author and illustrator, Jill Murphy, unfortunately passed away from cancer aged 72. This was such a shock for me. It was so sad, because as a kid and even as a grown-up, I used to read a lot of her books to my nephews and my nieces. She did The Worst Witch, she wrote 5 Minutes Peace, and she wrote so many brilliant books. So that's such a loss to the children's book world.
God, it's so sad, and just cancer sucks. Like,
I know.
God,
it's always the good ones as well. Always the good writers.
You know what's sad is, you know, there's whenever we do this bookish buzz segment, I think, you know, there's always going to be like the sad news in there as well. It's just, I guess part of it's, you know, circle of life, but part of it is just, you know, with COVID and cancer and these things that are taking so many people from us, it's really sad.
Well, hopefully next month we might not have a
let's
famous
shoot
writer
let's shoot for
going
that.
on.
Yes.
That's it. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now to move to kind of a humorous note, on August 14th, which was the date that we were actually recording our August podcast episode, it was Free Comic Book Day here in the United States, so it's a kind of a national event. And for some reason, a public library in Farmingdale, which is in Long Island, New York, was, you know, I think a lot of places did this. Like, they gave out, like, special prizes and gifts for people who came to their events at their, like, their comic book stores or at local bookstores and libraries, you know, because it's fun. Like, we like, you know, free things, and we like fun days like this where, you know, you can enjoy things that you love, like comic books. But this public library, for some reason, I don't know how it got past the people that were stuffing these giveaway bags, but they ended up putting a pornographic comic book into their free giveaway bags that they were handing out to families as they attended the library's event. Wow.
I wonder how many got accidentally passed out. It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like, I can't remember exactly what it said, but I know that obviously somebody communicated. And so, as a parent, I'm like, I don't know how I would react. Like, I think it's funny. And, you know, if my kid's like, oh my gosh, mom, look at this, I think I'd bust out laughing. But it's just, you know, it happens. Like, things like this happen. Yeah. And it's just, I just found it really kind of funny. And I hope that, you know, people aren't giving them too much, you know, crap for it. Cause, you know, it didn't hurt anybody. No one's like, you know, hurt from it. So
yeah, exactly.
It was a mistake. It happens, but I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, we actually have a Free Comic Book Day over here as well on the same date.
Oh, okay.
I think it's been quite a new kind of introduction to us. We've done it for about 4 or 5 years, I think, now, at least.
So now we need to call it an International Comic Book Day.
Exactly, yeah.
Let's be inclusive.
Exactly. Okay, so on to away from comics and back onto the book world, and in particular the fantasy series. So for fans of the From Blood and Ash series by Jennifer Armentrout, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, Jennifer L. Armentrout. There is a new book coming, book 4.
Oh my God, I can't wait. This is like the biggest book news of the month for me, at least.
I actually got these in my birthday, so I'm really looking forward to reading these three. So book 4 is titled The War of Two Queens, and it's slated to be released on March 15th, 2022.
Oh my God.
So yeah.
Can't wait.
Watch this space.
Can't wait. That series is just like, it's one of my new favorite series. I binge read the first two back to back right before the third one came out this past spring, and I had to wait a month before book 3 came out, and I think I cried myself to sleep every night because it wasn't out yet. It's such a good series.
You're picking up so much. I might have to read it this month. I
yes.
might have to like put it at the top of my list.
Yes, because then we can talk about it. All right. Then to wrap up our news segment, you know, New York Times, they always have their bestseller list, and, you know, you always see on covers of books, New York Times bestseller. So this week, looking at the New York Times bestsellers list, there's some interesting things. Every now and then you see a book that's been on the list for a while. And Where the Crawdads Sing, a super popular book. I think we mentioned last week or last episode that this is becoming a movie that's going to be released next summer. Where the Crawdads Sing has been on the New York Times bestseller list for 145 weeks. And it's, I know, like, that's kind of crazy. I don't do math, but I think that's pushing almost 6 months, I believe.
145 weeks, that's like...
oh, no, that's more, I'm thinking days.
That's
See, I told you
years.
I don't do math. I read, okay? I read books, I don't do math.
So that's pretty much, I'm guessing, from the date it was released.
Yeah, so, okay, so there's 52 weeks in a year, so we're looking at...
Almost 3 years, yeah.
Almost 3 years. Oh, that's a little different than 6 months. 3 years. So that's pretty exciting. So, you know, the the New York Times bestseller list goes beyond just the top 10. It's sitting at number 11 this week. Last week, I believe it was right around 9. So it's fluctuating where it is, but the fact that it's still on the list after 3 years really shows the popularity of it. And honestly, I think it's a good indication of the popularity of the movie and how...
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm, I think it's probably climbed up again recently because of the movie news.
It probably.
I think that's probably really brought it to the forefront because it was a brilliant book. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. And you've read it as well, haven't you, honey?
I have. You know, and it's funny because when I read it, I read it a while ago, probably beginning of last year, maybe. I'd have to go back and look. But it took me a while to get into it. I had a major love-hate relationship with Kaya. Like, I had a real struggle with her, and I'm like, you're driving me crazy. I like the storyline. I like how it turned out. So I'm definitely going to see the movie. Like, I'm excited for that.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to that.
Another book that has been, and now that I, you know, thank you, Liz, for reminding me that there's 52 weeks in a year, and we're not basing years on days. The Midnight Library is another super popular book, and it's been on the New York Times bestseller list now for 39 weeks, so it's approaching that 1 year mark, and it's sitting right now this week at number 9, so it's still in the top 10 as well. So it's kind of following in the footsteps of Where the Crawdads Sing. So we'll see how much longer that one stays on there. And I know you read that one too.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I'm very surprised it's been, I'm guessing that's again from the release date, because I'm sure it's only been out for just under a year.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that again is also another one that's been out from the beginning. But no, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a clever concept. I know we kind of discussed this before the podcast, and and we've had slightly kind of conflicting ideas about it. So so tell us what you thought about it.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a very interesting concept, and for me, I don't know necessarily that this was the intent of the book, because I think you could perceive it differently. But for me, I know people who have committed suicide and have lost their lives, and mental health is a really important topic to me. And there were moments in there where I felt and perceived it as almost like glorifying suicide. Like, you know, hey, look at all these other lives you could have had. And it would be great if in real life we had that someone could, like, you know, sit down. But it's just like mental health is just so serious. And I just felt that it, I don't know. And I know that's probably a very unpopular opinion, but it's just my own personal experiences with mental health and suicide that I just kind of struggled with it. But I enjoyed the book and I enjoyed the premise of it. And definitely worth a read.
I think mental health is very it's a very sensitive subject because it's very subjective. Mm-hmm. It is all about how mental health affects you rather than how mental health affects people in general. So I think it is very tough to write a book based on mental health that's not going to upset a few people, because what could be fine for some people could be seen as like a triggering effect for others. So it's so tough to do. But I think overall he did a good job. I can see why it would cause a little bit of upset. But I mean, well, the proof is in the pudding as such. So the fact that it's been in the top bestsellers list in the New York Times. And I can also see, I was just looking at them now, one of the books we spoke about last episode, Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, that you read, is still at number 6. It's climbed up this week.
That's a good one too.
Yep. And Stephen King is number 2. So I'm very happy about that. I want to get that book. It just sounds really good. And all I've heard on Bookstagram is good things. So.
Yeah. Well, the current number 1, to wrap up our book buzz, the current number 1 is The Madness of Crowds by Louise Penny. So I believe that was a new release within the last week or so. And so,
yeah, it's new this week. I've never heard of the book or even the author. I'll be honest. Have you read any of Louise Penny's at all?
I haven't. I hadn't really heard of this book, and I haven't really heard of this author. So, but it's number 1 right now. So maybe it's worth a look.
Well, I mean, it says it's the 17th book in the Chief Inspector Gamache series.
So oh, well, there you go.
Pretty successful for like 17 books of them.
Yeah. Interesting. So that's definitely something that maybe is worth a look to see what kind of, run they've had
Yeah,
with
I mean,
those
definitely.
17 books.
Yeah.
Jeez. Wow.
I know, they're trying to give Stephen King a run for those money.
Right, exactly. All right, well, that wraps up our bookish buzz. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with what you're reading. All right, what you're reading? So, Liz, what are your
Yes.
thoughts and ideas on what you've read this past month or 3 weeks, I
So,
guess?
so two of the books that it kind of stood out to me most this month or this past month is one that I saw you recommended a lot recently, which was Scythe by Neil Shusterman. Absolutely love the series. It was definitely a 5-star read for me. I loved the concept of it and the whole idea of the cloud being this big machine which takes over the world, just because it's interesting that it could actually one day be true. That's the kind of the scariest part of it. And also I like the fact that it wasn't your typical AI takes over the world and destroys humanity. It's AI takes over the world, makes humanity better, makes them perfect. So I really liked that idea. It was nice kind of refreshing kind of concept compared to some of the other books.
I'm so glad when I saw that you were reading it. And like, yes, it's such a good series. It really is. And like you said, it's such a unique concept and it a twist on like technology that a lot of times we already feel overruns and rules our lives. And it was just such a interesting way to give the cloud a persona and,
Definitely.
personify it. So it, oh, I can't wait for you to move through the rest of the series.
And my second one was actually it was actually an arc that I read through NetGalley, which I thought sounded interesting. I thought, yeah, it sounds pretty good. It's called All Our Darkest Secrets by Martin Ford. But having read it was just amazing. I really, really enjoyed it. It is psychological thriller, but it's the sort of one where there's always something happening, and especially the last like couple of chapters, my heart was literally pounding out of my chest because I needed to know what happened because it was so dramatic. It was such a dramatic finale. So that one was, yeah, definitely a big kind of highlight of my year's reading, and I definitely recommend that one.
When is that one re getting released?
That one is, I think it's out now actually. I think it came out. Yeah, no, in fact, it came out, I believe, a few days ago on the 1st of September. So yeah, no, that's out already. So yeah, I definitely recommend that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so Holly, what are you reading? Oh, what have you read this past month?
So this past month has been a really kind of a slower read for me. I work in public education. We went back to school for, our post-COVID survival time and, 1700 kids in one school and a weird pandemic world. I've just been swamped with work and my own personal children. So I've only got through a couple books this month. But I did read as part of a book club, The Final Girls Support Group by Grady Hendrix. It's been kind of popular. I've been seeing it around a lot on Instagram. And I love the concept of it. It's really about these final girls, and the final girls are a group of women who, as teenagers, were the sole survivor of mass murders, like mass killings. And so how they have kind of rallied together, created the support group, to help them cope with this horrible trauma and tragedy that they've dealt with. I mean, you've got to assume that they probably have like survivor's guilt and like
Oh,
how
yeah,
they're pushed. Yeah.
PTSD.
And just how they like have been pushed through the media throughout their teenage years and into adulthood. And so I thought it was interesting. And I read it. And unfortunately, I was a little disappointed in it. It was just a little meh. Like I just posted my review yesterday, so I have a short review on my Instagram page, but the full review is on my blog. But I mean, I liked aspects of it. I don't know. I went through most of the book going, "Oh my God, these people are crazy," and not just, the final girls, but like the police officers that they interact with, I'm like, they're crazy. I'm thinking of all the internal investigations that this police department would go through. So it is truly a fictional story. So if you can do some suspension of disbelief and, you know, just kind of, you know, just throw your hair back and be like, it's fiction. Yeah. It's whatever can happen, happens. You know, it's definitely interesting. It's another one of those books for me where it's like the last couple of chapters redeemed it a little bit for me. But, you know, so it was, you know, so that's one I read. And then I read an arc called The Hidden by Melanie Golding. And it's kind of like a crime drama. You have this lady who's trying to solve and put these pieces together. There's a man who was found unconscious in critical condition. And then there's two women and a toddler missing. And so trying to figure out, and she ends up having some very deep personal connections to the case. And there's what really kind of made it cool and different from some of like the other just kind of, you know, crime stories and thrillers and stuff that are out there is Melanie Golding threw in some folklore. And it was just kind of an interesting twist on it. So there's like mention of there's like this angle in it, this arc in it that dealt with silkies, which are, you know, people who at first I'm like mermaids, but it's more like people who have like this coat and kind of like mermaids, but they become, instead of mermaids, they're like seals. So yeah. It was kind of I'm like, how is she going to meld this folklore of Selkie seal people into this like legitimate kind of crime investigation? But I loved it, and it's an arc. So I read it, you know, the advanced copy of it. It's not going to be released until November. So closer to time when we get to the our new and upcoming releases, I'll bring it back up to remind people to check it out. Before we move into what we're currently reading, I do want to welcome Kate Allen. She has just joined us. So welcome, Kate.
Hi, Kate. Yes, hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me on. I'll just sit here while you guys talk.
Well, okay, just have your unmute button handy because we'll probably ask you what you're reading right now because that's what we're moving into. So, Liz, talk to us about what you're reading.
So, as I've said previously, I did receive a lot of books my birthday a few days ago. So I've had plenty to choose from, but I thought I'd start with The Cruel Prince by Holly Black, which is part of the Folk and Air series. So really enjoying that so far. I'm at halfway through, but I love fantasy, and it's been a genre that I've really quite heavily relied upon during kind of the last year and a half during all the lockdowns and everything. So it's one that I've really kind of really loved. And on audiobook, I'm currently listening to Everything I Know About Love by Dolly Alderton. I started this actually about 6 months ago, but I never finished it. I think I just dumped onto a different book, but I thought I'd start it again. And it's nice because it's very much aimed at kind of my age group, because they're talking about things like MSN Messenger and kind of being a teenager and talking to everyone, all your friends straight away as you get home from school. And it really kind of relates to my age group. You always like really relate to everything that she's speaking about, and it's very kind of down to earth. So again, also really enjoying that. Two very different books.
Yeah, sounds like it. I mean, I've read the Cruel Prince series, so just like Scythe, I'm so excited that you're reading it. So you can finish it and we can talk about it. But yeah,
what are you reading in my name?
So I'm reading two books as well. I am reading The Inheritance Games by Jennifer Lynn Barnes. And it's really kind of cool. And I didn't really look into exactly what it's about. Sometimes I just read books because I think they sound cool or I'll see them and I don't really read the synopsis or the blurbs. Yeah. But this one's been really kind of interesting. You have this girl who just, you know, she's not living with, she doesn't have parents. So she's living with her older sister and, you know, so they don't have a lot of money. They're kind of poor. And she's just trying to make it through high school, and she is named in the will of a multi-billionaire who's just passed away. She has no idea. Nobody knows how she's connected. Like, the family doesn't know. She doesn't know. And the guy who passed away was pretty much a a Riddler. So he creates all these puzzles, and so he's left all these kind of clues because they're all trying to figure out why she's in the will and basically took the fortune, took the incomplete inheritance away from the members of the family. And so the family's all mad. And but like, you know, the grandsons are kind of working with her to try to figure out what that connection is. So it's been interesting. I like riddles like that. I like kind of like puzzle figure it out kind of stories. So it's definitely a kind of a cool young adult book. And then I'm reading He Loves Me, She Loves Me Not by Emerson Park. She actually reached out to me and provided me a copy of this book. And it was just released on August 1st? It's just been recently released. I want to say it was August 1st that it was released. So it's out and it's available, and it's more of a contemporary women's fiction book. And it's really, I've kind of hooked in it. So again, it's a girl who's kind of growing up. She, her dad ends up passing away. It's set back in, it's kind of like a chronological timeline. Like each chapter tells you the date. It's kind of set in the late, primarily in the late 80s. And her mom is not the best mom. She definitely would not win Mother of the Year award. But now her mom is in critical condition after a stroke. And so she's kind of on this mission. She came home from college. She's now kind of on this mission to try to figure out a little bit more about her mom. And so she's found her mom's old journals, and it's completely given her mom a different person. It's like, you know, a completely different side of her mom than what she experienced growing up with her. So it's been pretty good.
That sounds emotional.
it's kind of sad, because like your heart kind of breaks for her just how her childhood went, and now like she's kind of reconciling how she felt growing up to what she's learning about her mom in her journals. So, so Kate, go ahead, Liz.
I was going to say the Inheritance Games. That was one that I've seen it in a bookshop. It does sound very interesting. So I'll be interested to kind of have a chat with you once you've finished.
Find out your thoughts. And not to jump ahead, but book number two in the Inheritance Game series is coming out on Tuesday. In the United States, and then on Thursday in England. So when you read book one, at least you know you can binge read it with book two, because it's being released this week. It's called The Hawthorne Legacy is book two.
Nice.
All right, Kate, what are you reading?
So I actually have a couple of ARCs. I got approved for a bunch of ARCs and then sent stuff recently. So I'm listening to an audiobook arc for a book called First Love, Take Two. And it's kind of a contemporary romance. So far it seems like the main character, she's a doctor, and she had to break up with her first boyfriend over family disapproval. And so she kind of gets a second shot at dating him, and I don't know where it's going, but I like it so far. Yeah. And then I got sent another arc called Oh William by Elizabeth Strout. I don't know if you guys have seen that floating around. I think it was a Penguin Random House book, but I can't exactly remember. They sent it to me a little while ago, but and that one is more of a, I don't know if either of you have read Sorrow and Bliss by Meg Mason, but it kind of reminds me of that. It's more like a really sentimental, emotional contemporary stream of consciousness read, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So it's a little literary. I guess that's the word I'm looking for. It's kind of a literary fiction. But
I love stream of consciousness because I think that's how I talk. So I can relate to it. Sometimes I don't really think before I speak, and then I'll just speak and everyone's like, what are you talking about? So I can relate to stream of consciousness.
Definitely. Yeah, I think some readers really hate it. They think it's hard to follow, but for me, it kind of makes a weird sense to read. So I enjoy that too. So yeah,
that's awesome. All right, so let's talk just quickly, because we already talked about one, about some new and upcoming releases. September is going to be a big month.
We've got a lot of releases coming out. We talked about this before the podcast. It does seem to be that autumn months do tend to be very popular for new book releases. So I'm quite excited to see kind of what what the next few months brings, as well as these ones coming up.
Yeah, so like for example, we talked about the Hawthorne Legacy Book 2 and the Inheritance Games coming out this week, actually. And there's another book that's coming out this week. It's actually already out in England, but The Night She Disappeared by Lisa Jewell comes out in the United States on Tuesday, which would be tomorrow. And but it's currently out, and I've been seeing that one. That one seems to be pretty popular right now. I'm seeing it floating around on Instagram a lot.
Yeah, no, it does. Lisa Jewell does tend to be quite a good one. I think I've read a few of her books. I haven't read any recently, but no, she is a very good, very talented writer. So it'd be interesting to see how that one does. I think I read her first one called Ralph's Party, which came out years ago now. But no, really good book. So definitely looking forward to seeing how that does. And the next one, there's also, which if you've been looking at Instagram recently on my page, I did a review of it, and it's T.J. Klune's new book, Under the Whispering Door. That comes out on the 21st of September. I know for the UK, it only comes out on the Kindle in September. I don't know whether it's coming out physical in the US. Is it on 21st September?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think our one's not coming out physical until October, so I'm guessing there's been some sort of stock delay there. But it is a brilliant book. So I don't want to give away too much, but basically there's this old guy who is who works in law. He's very much career driven. He's very self-centered, doesn't have friends or family because he lives for work. He lives for his success. He dies, and then he's taken to the ferryman who tried to help him accept his death and move on to the next life. So I haven't actually read the first one. Holly did an amazing job, and she brought me the first book for my birthday. So
I couldn't make it a bigger hint. Like, Liz, you got to read it. So I'm just going to buy it for you for your birthday, because you've got to read The House on the Cerulean Sea.
But if it's anywhere near as good as Under the Whispering Door, it's going to be amazing. But yeah, definitely check it out on 21st September for the US and UK.
Awesome. Another one that's coming out is a book by Anthony, I believe his last name is Dürer, I'm not sure, but he is the author of All the Lights We Cannot See, which is another book that we see a lot kind of floating around on Instagram. But he has a new book coming out on September 28th in both England and the United States, which is called Cloud Cuckoo Land. So, I don't know, just the title itself sounds intriguing, and I'm hooked, so I'll probably be checking that out at some point.
I've had All the Lights We Cannot See on my Kindle for so long. It's just one of those books I haven't actually got around to reading yet. Mm-hmm. But I've heard a lot of good things. I think Books and Margaritas just read it recently.
Oh, I have it too. And I just, like, it's one of those books that just kind of, like, I just kind of pass over it for whatever reason. Yeah. Yep.
And of course, we've got one other one coming out this month, which is by Nicholas Sparks.
I love him.
I'm a big fan of Nicholas Sparks. So really look forward to this one. It is called The Wish, and that one is out on September 28th, both in the US and the UK. This one is, I haven't actually looked up blurbs. It obviously it's going to be another kind of heart-wrenching love story. It's a heart-wrenching story about discovery and loss. It's a reminder that time with those precious to us is the greatest gift of all. Aww. I mean, if anything, you know that with a Nicholas Sparks book, you're going to cry. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be heartbroken.
Exactly.
He has an absolute way with emotive language. So, yeah, it looks a bit, like the picture looks a bit kind of Christmassy. So might be something worth reading nearer to the Christmas season. It's got lots of snow on it and things.
Yeah. I love, like, the Christmas. See, I'm not a huge romance reader, which is good that we're going into our interview with Kate here in a minute. Mm-hmm. But I do really enjoy like watching Hallmark Christmas movies as well. And I like reading. I like reading books that follow, like, the same kind of, like, Hallmark movie feel-ish. I like that. Nicholas Sparks doesn't give me the Hallmark movie. I'm always, like, heartbroken and sobbing. So, but I still, for some reason, we still go back and we still read his books because they're just really good.
Yeah, we're a sucker for torture.
Yeah, aren't we? Oh, my gosh.
But, I mean, Dear John, The Notebook, I love The Notebook, and the film especially was just, I can watch watched that so many times.
I know. All right, so a lot of good books on the horizon. I think we're reading some really good books. I'm really into what we're reading right now. So we can't wait to see to get to these new books. So we're going to take another short little break, and then we will be back, and we're going to dive in to our interview with Kate Allen. Okay. All right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're still going. We're still recording. We just kind of pause a little bit so we know where to put in different things, but we're back now.
Okay.
All right. So, Liz, would you like to kind of kick us off?
Yes, as we previously said, we have Kate Allen here with us today, which we are so happy to have you here. So thank you very much for joining us. Obviously, she is the writer of Fear of Flying, which I had the pleasure of reviewing and was part of the book tour quite a while ago now. It was quite a good few months ago. So start off, tell us a bit about yourself, Kate.
Sure. So Fear of Flying was my first novel. And I'm an attorney during the day. I'm based in Texas, Dallas, Texas, to be specific. I mostly just write, travel, do random creative stuff in my free time. And then, you know, I lawyer during the day.
what made you first want to become an author? What inspired you?
So I have actually been writing, since I was about 5 or 7. So it's been a long time dream of mine to have a book published. Both of my parents have dabbled in writing, mostly journalism, when I was growing up. So, and they're both very avid readers. So it just kind of fell into place. And then I actually studied English literature for my bachelor's degree. So, yeah,
that's kind of cool. My undergraduate degree is actually in journalism as well. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of like I went into it going, I can be a journalist. You know, I did journalism in high school. I'm like, I like writing, I like interviewing people and kind of investigating things and figuring things out. And then of course I am not a journalist right now. Changed my major about 4 times in college, but became a teacher. But I will say I taught journalism for many years at the high school level. And so I still got to experience my love of journalism and pass that love on. And at least I can see some of my former students now working for, you know, TV stations in Wisconsin and doing social media stuff for companies. So it's like I'm living vicariously through them since I decided not to pursue that field.
So you guys studied journalism at high school?
Yeah. So we had even at the high school I'm at right now, we have a journalism program. And so it looks a lot different now. When I was in high school, we actually had to do the old fashioned broadsheets and we had to do the measurements and we had to send it all in. And I mean, and that was in the 90s. So it's not like, you know, back in the 50s, but you know, technology just shows how quickly technology advanced from when I was doing this in 1995 in high school to now. And even like when I was teaching it, it evolved from when I was teaching it to we digitally designed every, like, all the pages, and we just submitted the pages and they printed the newspaper, to now we don't really do printed newspapers anymore. We have our online news sites. So our kids now learn how to do journalistic writing, online photography and all of that stuff, but then they learn how to build it and maintain it as like a live website.
Yeah. No, we had to wait. I had to wait till I got to university to study journalism. They didn't do it at college or at school for us. So we had, I think the closest thing we did was media studies.
Oh.
So, yeah, no, it's interesting that you guys study journalism. Oh, I'm so jealous. I would have loved to have started early.
Yeah, I grew up in a really small town, and we didn't have media studies or journalism in high school. So that sounds fantastic. I'm really jealous of the kids these days.
Yeah, me too. They're able to be exposed to so much that we just, you know. And it's sad because, like, none of us are that old. You know, according to my 13-year-old, you're not old until you're 60, and I don't think anybody here is 60. But it's just like, I don't, it just shows just how quick everything changes, and I don't know. Okay.
I mean, now they do like coding at school.
Yes. So
that's something we never would have done at school.
Yeah. And we have coding at our high school. Like as early as ninth grade, our kids can take coding. They can take 4 years of coding and go right into like a computer science program and probably be further ahead than some of the college freshmen. Yeah. So it is insane for the opportunities. Okay. Kate, can you just talk us through your writing process? Like, what does that look like? Like, do you plan a lot before you get started? Do you just dive right in and have it become a stream of consciousness and then you revamp it later?
So I'm not a big plotter, you know, what they call like those authors who have like those fabulous spreadsheets and like charts. And I think that's amazing. And I've tried to be that person, but so far the thing that seems to work and actually help me finish books is to just dive into it. I wouldn't really say the narratives are stream of consciousness, but I do scene hop, you know, so I kind of big picture know exactly what I want the ending to be, what I want to happen. And you know, my document while I'm writing kind of has little, you know, headers, very long descriptive headers for, you know, scenes that come to mind. And I just hop around. And then I kind of, you know, Frankenstein the manuscript at the end to make it fit the way that I want it to, rather than, you know, the order I wrote it in. And then I edit it a bunch. It makes my life harder, but at least it's on paper. So
I find that so fascinating that's how you do it. Like, I don't know if I would be able to keep myself straight. Like, how do you not get it all kind of like mixed up? And how do you know, like, I'm assuming at the end when you're Frankensteining it back together that you have like pages upon pages upon pages of writing. How do you know that you're actually getting it back in like the order in your, that you have it in your head?
So I do. I mean, mostly from feedback. I go through my drafts several times, and like I said, it makes my life more difficult. I think the authors who tend to plan more thoroughly and are able to, you know, write, you know, in a linear manner, I think their lives are probably a lot easier. They probably don't have as many messy drafts as I do. but I do the best I can. It's usually just the story. I have it so clearly in my mind how I want it. So whenever I reread the draft, you know, it sticks out to me if I realize, you know, oh, this narrative beat isn't where it should be. I actually intended for it to be here, or it works better. So it's pretty easy. It's just time consuming. And it, you know, it takes a few more drafts, but then I also, you know, have critique partners. And then of course, editors, are the biggest ones that, you know, help cut what doesn't need to be there, or, you know, kind of make things make sense that to me at the time, they, you know, it made sense to me when I wrote it, but you know, it's not really getting across to an objective reader. So, you know, those people are imperative, especially when you're a messy writer, like I think.
I love the fact you describe yourself as a messy writer.
Yeah. It's just the truth. So.
I think that's a fascinating way of making it. As I say, like, we've only had one other author on, and it's just so interesting to hear about the different methods that each author has and how everyone writes differently. So what else, what are you working on at the moment? Are you working on a new project or?
Yes. So I actually have something that I can't talk about, but I'm very excited about it. I have some thriller news, but I'm probably going to be publishing it under a pen name that's unrelated to Kate Allen, just because the genre is so different.
Yeah.
So I can't really talk about it too much, but it seems like we might have an offer on that end. So I'm very excited about that.
Wow.
When that news is going to come through. And then I also am working on another contemporary romance. So, you know, hopefully that'll be coming out sometime next year. So, yeah.
Fantastic. That's exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's exciting, but it's kind of like, oh, just tell us, but we get it. We understand.
I know. it's like a very recent thing, so that's why I have to mention it, because I'm super excited about it, but unfortunately, can't show the juicy details, but yeah.
No, we'll be waiting for when you can.
Exactly. Yes. We'll keep our eyes closed. How far through are you for the contemporary romance? How's that going coming along?
So it's in the editing process, and it's not quite as messy as Fear of Flying was when it was in the draft stage. So it's kind of getting along there. So
yeah
it's it's near the end. It actually takes place in Texas, and it has a lot of food involved in the narrative, which I always think is nice.
We love books with food.
Yeah, I mean, if you need any ARC readers, you've got two perfect ones right there.
Absolutely, yes.
Food and romance, this is like two of the best combinations.
yes. There's also bartending. One of the main characters is a hunky bartender. Mm. So
I'm already intrigued.
And as another selling point, he's the one who cooks. So, because I think men cooking is amazing. So.
Yes, no, I completely agree.
100% agree.
Sold. Completely sold.
So it's interesting that you're talking about, like, the news is like kind of a different genre that you're writing. With Fear of Flying, you know, we've heard like that it's kind of classified as a romance, but we've also heard that's kind of also just contemporary like fiction. How would you describe your writing style? Like, where would you categorize your books and your genres?
Oh man. I think you might have commented on my post about, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago. I was writing about how, like romance and women's fiction, I think it's such a weird blurred line that people are asked to draw. And that kind of, it came out with, Helen Huang, her new book. She had some criticism that, some reviewers didn't think it was real romance because it focused a lot on the female character's, development and working through grief, which my book has a lot of, you know, heavier themes. Yeah. And I kind of got some similar feedback because there's a lot of mental health issues and then also grief in my book. But, you know, it's kind of inextricably intertwined with the romance. So I don't know. That's a great question. I would think that Nicholas Sparks is actually romance, but I don't think a lot of people think that because he doesn't have happy endings most, if any, of the times.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure if I've ever read anything that he's written that has a happy ending. So that's a great question. I would think, I don't know. I think my book is, you know, broadly contemporary fiction, but it's also women's fiction because it follows, you know, the main character's journey, but there are a few point of view shifts between her and the male lead that I think kind of put it into the romance genre.
Okay.
So it's tricky.
So then when you write then, because I write, I've been writing since I was 13. I just haven't done anything with anything I write. But I just like, so I, when I write, I just write because I think I have a cool story idea and I just want to write, and I don't try to pigeonhole it into a specific genre. Mm-hmm. So when you write, is that more or less kind of like you try not to like say, this is going to be this genre. I just want to write and enjoy what I'm writing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly how it is. I actually didn't even start looking into genre classifications and all the little nuances until I was querying my my other book, and then also, you know, Fear of Flying. So it's and then I started, you know, when you're querying agents and things like that, you have to pitch it. And so then I started wondering, what is my book exactly? and that was the first time I'd really heard of women's fiction. And then, you know, I kind of thought, I don't know, I feel like my book could fit into women's fiction. But broadly speaking, it does also check the boxes for romance. So, you know, I kind of just tailored it to fit into what people were asking for, if I thought that the characters and the plot they were looking for was there. So yes, I don't really pay any mind to genre when I'm writing. It's just something that, you know, unfortunately you have to research and look at afterwards.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Good to know.
So obviously, talking of your debut novel, Fear of Flying, as I say, I've read it and I've really enjoyed it. It was such a great read. Just talk about where did the idea originally come from?
So I have been everywhere that they travel to in the books, and I don't know, I thought I love travel, I love romance, I thought it would be kind of a fun idea to have you know, a character who's at a low point of her life, in her, you know, early 20s, trying to figure out what's going on. You know, she ends up on an unexpected trip, and you know, it's kind of a way for me to work through some broader themes that I always think about, you know, with loss and grieving, and, you know, what makes it so terrifying to care deeply about someone when you're, you know, you've just lost someone else that you very deeply care about. And so I thought a great way to do that would be to explore it through these fictional characters and put them in a completely different setting than I've ever been in, you know, like, the framework of their lives is completely different from mine. But you know, it was fun to make these characters and flesh them out and see how they explored these themes that I've come across in my life. So.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, it was a brilliant read. And I think, haven't you picked up a copy recently, Holly, as far as
I have a copy of it. I have not started it yet, but I have a copy, and I am super excited to dive into it and read it. So, yeah. So,
well, thank you so much for reading it. That's awesome. I hope you like it.
I will.
It is a little bit heavier, so just be warned.
I can handle a heavy book. Absolutely. I got this.
Definitely have to season it by.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so you talk about it's a kind of a heavier book and things like that. You have a pretty heavy career. You're a lawyer. So kudos to you, because I could never do that. I do know my limitations. But everything in our life, like our jobs and everything, do impact who we are and how we perceive the world and how we look at things. So how has your work as a lawyer, and I'm also curious to know what kind of lawyer you are, if you're willing to share that, but how has your work as a lawyer impacted your writing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually think, you know, as I said, I've been writing for a very long time. I took a break between my undergrad and, you know, while I was in law school, I didn't really write fiction. But I wrote a lot of, just part of law school and being a lawyer is constantly writing, but it's not the fun type. So I don't know. I feel like just the technical aspect of it really helped me. It made me more of an analytical thinker when it comes to writing. Obviously, the organization part doesn't translate to my writing process. And I think that's actually why I kind of resist the organization, because it kind of separates the fun writing from, you know, my day job. But I mean, there's really no big legal themes or anything in A Fear of Flying. I think it's mostly just the technical aspect have kind of informed how I tackle, you know, plot lines and, you know, maybe logic and things like that. So, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Know. That's a good question.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And then, as far as, Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, no, you carry on. Don't worry. You carry on.
No, I was just going to say, as far as type of lawyer, I actually, during law school, I was really focused into criminal law and then also tax law. I do neither of those now. I did practice tax law for a brief time. But yeah, I do mostly business, intellectual property, and, you know, estate planning, that kind of thing. So it's completely different from what I was planning to do during law school, but I'm very happy with it. So.
But it's almost like more connected to what you do as an author if you're doing like intellectual law and stuff like that. And so exactly. I can see that connection there. So that's really cool.
Exactly. You can make sure you know how to copyright your brand and your book and keep it safe.
Exactly.
Okay, so talking of writing, who are your literary inspirations? Who do you kind of look up to?
So I don't know. That's such a tricky question. I feel like just in the past year, I have stumbled upon so many new authors. Yeah. That I didn't really know existed until I was reviewing things for, you know, my Bookstagram account before I got published.
Who have been some of your highlights of the year then, author-wise?
Okay, so since I mentioned it earlier with the currently reading section, so Meg Mason, I think she's fantastic. She's amazing. She only has a couple of books out, but I think she's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you guys should definitely read her book, Sorrow and Bliss. Okay. I think it's amazing. So she's actually a UK author, I believe.
Okay.
I think she's a UK author, but she lives in Australia. I could be completely flip-flopped on that. But so her, and then I think, Taylor Jenkins Reid. I always get her name confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she's fantastic. And I just recently discovered her too, but she has so many books backlogged over the years that I need to kind of catch up on.
Which two did you read?
So I really like Daisy Jones and the Six. That was the latest one that I read.
I just listened to that audiobook. So good. Really, really enjoyed that one.
It's amazing. I think it's made for audio. I started reading the ebook, and then I switched over to the audio, and I thought the performances were amazing. It was so great.
Oh, no, definitely. It has to be. That's the one that I would. I don't usually read fiction, like listen to fiction on audio. I like memoirs and autobiographies, but this one was just made to be audiobook. It was such a brilliant performance.
Yeah. And I think she's really good at, she's a very, I think, introspective writer. Like she really likes to look at personal relationships. So I read Malibu Rising, the latest one that came out. Yeah. And I thought she's very deft at looking at, you know, interpersonal relationships and stuff. So yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome. So this question might be a little connected to that in who you choose, but if you could collaborate with any writer living or dead, who would you want to collaborate with and why?
Okay, so living or dead. So I think this is probably an answer that everybody would give, but I think Jane Austen would be amazing to collaborate with. Because I think she's she was a really cool person, but then also I think she would have so many interesting things and insights into our society these days. You know, I feel like a lot of her books had a really interesting, you know, subtext about how society was at the time. And so I would be really interested to see her feedback about, you know, the current relationships going on in the world today. So, yeah.
Great choice.
That is a good choice.
I love it.
So, obviously, recently you have set up a new website, a new blog called This Book Is Lit. So just tell us a bit about it and where did the idea come from?
So I actually started that website. I'm trying to remember when I started my book Instagram account. I guess it was at the very beginning of the pandemic, last March, maybe. In the year that we don't like to talk about.
The year that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I started it back then, and then I just kind of left it there and neglected it. I posted a few reviews, but I found that, you know, Instagram seemed to be more more the place to be where all the book parties are at. So, I kind of just left it there. And then, going through the author marketing process and everything on my own, I just felt like I felt like there were a lot of people that I wasn't connecting with that had like their own stories to tell and everything. And so I wanted to kind of connect more with, book reviewers, illustrators, and then authors that, we don't necessarily, they're not on the top 10 bestsellers list, maybe necessarily, but, they're great. They have insights and stories to share, and they have their own reader base. And, I thought it'd be fun to kind of revamp my neglected website and make it more of a hub for book nerds. Of all sorts, authors and readers.
I think it's such a good idea. And yeah, I love your site. I think that's the kind of thing that I wanted to go for. I wanted to kind of bring together a community and to be able to interact with, as you say, with writers, with bookstagrammers, all different kind of areas of the book community as such, and bring it all together. So, and of course, I did have a little article on your site a few weeks ago. So thank you for that.
No, thank you for doing that. That was great. And I, the other thing is when I was first publishing my book, you have to go through the process of asking other authors to read and blurb your book, if you want to quote and stuff. And that was really my first time interacting with these great published authors that I admire. And I just found out that people are so supportive and, they're all the creative people really love, everybody's books. And I kind of wanted to keep that warm community and spread it more because I think it's fantastic. So
it's so cool. Like, I looked at your website this morning and it's really cool. And of course, you're active on Bookstagram, and that community in itself is just, it's one of the best communities to be part of if you're involved with books and writing and just the love of literature. But as an author, what advice would you give to someone who's trying to write their first book?
I think the biggest thing, and it's the most straightforward piece of advice. It's not even advice. Everybody knows it. Just get it on paper is the most important thing. But the reason I say that is because, when you were asking me about my writing process, I mentioned how I'd kind of forced myself to be more of a planner. Mm-hmm. And I thought that I had to, to force myself to really be this, organized, person, which I think works for a lot of people. And I think some people might actually be fighting the opposite way. I think there are people who try to just dive in and then they're not able to get it all on paper because they're actually planners. And so I think the best thing is just no matter what it takes, find a way that works for you and get it on paper. And then, the rest you can deal with. That's really the hardest part. Just getting your story out.
Great advice. Because sometimes that's the hardest thing to do is just to get it on paper, but also just to not realize that your first draft is not going to be the end draft by any means.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just say, don't fight your nature, whoever you are as a writer, find it, but, don't try to force yourself into, being a specific type of writer. And I think a lot of people do that. So. Yeah.
Nice. Completely brilliant advice. What would be your favorite book of all time? Do you have like a book that you go back to time and time again?
Yeah, I actually have a couple. So I did go through a phase where I really loved reading Jane Eyre over and over again. Nice. I haven't read it in several years, but I think it's a fantastic book. So I love Jane Eyre. And then the other one, these are kind of just classics that they always make you read, but I don't know. I love them. The Outsiders by F.E. Hinton.
Love that one.
Love that book.
Stay gold, pony boy.
Yes. It breaks my heart every time, but I absolutely love that book. So those are kind of my two classics that I'll read over and over again. They would probably be the ones I'd bring on like a desert island scenario too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, I've never actually read The Outsiders. I think it's a very kind of American school education book.
True.
I think
very
you should
Americana. You gotta gotta read it.
You have to read it. Like I really think you would enjoy it. You'd get a lot out of it. But yeah. So yeah,
because super short too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, before we go into the next section, I've just got to mention. So you've got a guitar in the background. Are you quite a musical person?
Okay. So yes, I do have a guitar in the background, but no, I'm not. I'm not very good at it. I grew up playing clarinet, and then when I switched schools, I think I was 16 or something, and I didn't want to play clarinet anymore. I wanted to play like a cool instrument. And so I sold my clarinet and I bought this guitar. And that was, you know, a while ago. And I've played it on and off. I'm not good at it, but I enjoy it. It's fun. I also have a ukulele that's over there that I'm a little bit better at, but, because it's, you know, it's tinier, it's easier to manage.
Yeah.
But no. Yeah.
Fantastic. So we're on to our final section. So this is our either or. For anyone who hasn't listened to the podcast before, we will ask 10 questions and it'd be an either or. So everyone has to answer. So Kate and Holly and myself have to answer. It's just a gut instinct one. It's a quick fire round just to finish off the episode. So are you guys ready today?
Ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What order, Liz? Okay. Who do you, how, what order do you want us to answer in?
Should we go Kate, you, me?
Perfect.
Cool. Okay. So let's start. Friends to lovers or enemies to lovers?
Friends to lovers.
Enemies to lovers.
Yeah. Enemies to lovers. Flowers or chocolate?
Flowers.
I'm going to go flowers.
Yeah, flowers. Love triangles or linear?
Oh, love triangles. Yeah.
I'm going to go love triangles.
Yeah, it's got to have a bit of drama.
Mm-hmm.
Slow burn or act first, think later?
Slow burn.
I'm going to go act first, think later.
Okay, slow burn. Flying or road trip?
Flying. Yeah. You can go more places.
I'm going to go road trip.
Yeah. I'm going to go road trip. Although that's true. Flying is more places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cute or sexy?
Cute.
I'm going to go cute.
I'm going to go sexy. Just
way to be different.
Exactly. Forbidden love or unrequited?
Unrequited. Breaks my heart every time. Love it.
I'm gonna go forbidden.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna go forbidden. Writing in silence or with background noise?
Silence.
Yeah, silence. Spontaneous plans or organized plans?
Spontaneous.
Can I say organized spontaneous?
He does just say both.
If I had to pick, so I like spontaneous, but I like to be a little bit organized in my spontaneity. But I would probably go spontaneous if I had to pick.
Yeah, everything is spontaneous. And finally, romantic beach holiday or big city adventure?
Romantic beach holiday.
Absolutely, romantic beach holiday.
It's got to be the beach holiday. Has to be.
Has to be.
Fantastic. See, there we go. You guys have survived the either or section. So that is it from us. So thank you so much, Kate, for joining us. And just before we go, can you just remind people out there of how they can contact you, your social media names?
Oh, sure. Yes. My handle on Instagram is the.rolling.scone. On Twitter, I'm Kate Allen Wright. And then the website, of course, you know, the book nerd hub is thisbookislit.com.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And just a reminder from our social media. So you can catch me on Instagram at Lizzie's Little Book Nook. And my website is lizzieslittlebooknook.co.uk. And Holly, remind us of your handles again.
On Instagram, you can find me at azdesertbookworm. And my blog is thebookshelf.substack.com. And we, again, thank Kate. Thank you for joining us today. It was super fun to learn about you and talk with you and share our love of literature and books and writing. Our next episode will be dropping on October 4th. So we have about a 4-week span now between. But what we're super excited about, Liz, is that we're doing 2 episodes in October, one at the beginning of the month and one at the end of the month. Do you want to say something quick about our end of October show?
Yeah, so the final one in October is going to be October 25th. So it's going to be obviously right near Halloween. So we're going to do a special kind of horror thriller special talking about our favorite horror books. So that's really exciting. I love October because it's such an excuse to get all the horror books out, all the Stephen Kings and the Poe and everything else. So really looking forward to that. And don't forget, you can also follow the podcast on Instagram as well, which is at Speaking Literally Podcast. And we're also on Facebook as well.
Yeah. So go ahead.
that's about it from us. So thank you again, Kate, for joining us. Any final words, Holly?
No, just thank you everyone for your support and listening to our podcast, and make sure that you check out Kate Allen's book, Fear of Flying, and then be watching for her news on her new projects that are coming out. And then we will see you guys all again in October. Thanks, everyone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.